I'm John Batchelor with Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. It's time for subscriptions. Behind the Black, Bob's taking us to Mars and the moon, but most importantly, he works on space engineering, the privatization of space engineering. So your generosity is appreciated, especially because we're about to talk about breaking even in space. Bob, a very good evening to you. I'm staring at my Starlink, and I'd like to think that I contributed to Elon Musk boasting. What is he boasting about? Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, John. Before we boast about Elon Musk, I want to just mention that Apollo astronaut Ken Mattingly passed away on October 31st at 87. Mattingly, who flew on Apollo 16 that went to the moon, he was the Apollo capsule commander, and he stayed in lunar orbit while John Young and Charles Dude spent 3 days on the moon. He also flew the fourth shuttle mission. The first four missions were test missions, and he was on the fourth one, and so he commanded that for a week. He was actually supposed to fly on Apollo 13, but he was exposed to German measles a few days before the launch, and the NASA decided they didn't want him to get sick. It take a chance of him getting sick or getting the crew sick, and so he was pulled from the mission 3 days before. He himself said it's a great thing he wasn't on Apollo 13 because if it gets colder than 60 degrees, his body becomes useless, and he would have been a disaster, he said, during the rescue effort on Apollo 13. Anyway, Ken Mattingly, another one of the Apollo astronauts, has unfortunately left us, John. Meanwhile, you wanted to know about SpaceX, Musk. Tweeted this week something quite interesting. He said that Starlink, quote, has achieved break-even cash flow. In other words, though they had thought they had to have Starship available and launching to get the Starlink constellation into orbit sufficient so they could make money on it, it turns out because Starship is delayed, thank you, federal government, they ramped up Falcon 9 launches, and they've gotten so many satellites into orbit that they've been able to make the system operational, and they've got more than 2 million subscribers, including you, John. And so they have actually gotten to a point where they're now making more money than Starlink is spending. That is an incredible situation. It means SpaceX will have definitely the funds to finish Starship Super Heavy, assuming the federal government gets out of the way, John. It's a pretty remarkable achievement.
Norway, Andøya Spaceport. So, again, this is looking to the future to invite private enterprise, I guess, into Norway.
Norway has opened its first spaceport. Well, it's not really its first. It has opened its official commercial spaceport. Andøya Spaceport is on an island in the very north of Norway, which puts it the highest latitude of any proposed spaceport at this moment, which gives it a great advantage for polar orbiting satellites. Andøya had been used for many, many years for suborbital test launching of rocket testing, but very similar to how the NASA used Wallops Island in the 1960s. But it hasn't been used very much. They decided a few years ago to turn it into a commercial spaceport, and they hope to launch orbital rockets there. I have one customer, a German startup rocket company, ISAR Aerospace, which hopes to launch its orbital spectrum rocket from Andøya. It is an interesting situation. This spaceport has kind of been opened ahead of the two Scottish spaceports in the UK. And if the UK doesn't get its regulatory framework operating properly, and Norway is going to steal all the business because private companies aren't going to go to the UK if it's going to take 2 years to get a launch license, which so far it appears to be happening. They bankrupted Virgin Orbit because of this. So anyway, that's a new spaceport, one of many to come, John. There's talk in other Scandinavian countries as well.
Artemis Accords, two more signatories. Iceland and the Netherlands. Remind everybody, Artemis, Bob, what's the object?
Artemis Accords was something put together during the Trump administration. It was originally designed as a way to get around the limitations of the Outer Space Treaty that prevents private enterprise in space, private ownership in space, and in fact prevents any nation from establishing legal framework in space. And so this, Artemis, of course, was an attempt to, between the U.S. would sign bilateral agreements with individual other nations in which they stated they were in favor of private enterprise and private property in space. The idea being if you get enough countries signed on, you eventually have a very strong alliance that can eventually very quickly change the Outer Space Treaty or ignore it. Now, that original goal has kind of faded with the Biden administration, but it's still nonetheless an alliance of Western nations that really favor private enterprise and a bottom-up society. Iceland and the Netherlands have just signed on. That makes 31 nations as part of this alliance. It's essentially a rewriting of the Cold War because the only ones not signing are communist or former communist nations like Russia, China, and a few of their allies like Venezuela, South Africa, and Pakistan. And so we are basically seeing the framework of the Cold War that will exist in space once colonization begins.
What is Tenacity?
Tenacity is Dream Chaser. It is the name of the first Dream Chaser vehicle being built by Sierra Space. It is a cargo mini shuttle that is supposed to bring cargo up and down to ISS. Sierra Space has a contract with NASA to do this. That contract was issued about 2017 or so, maybe a little earlier than that. But in 2018, Sierra Space said they hope to launch Tenacity, the first Dream Chaser, to bring cargo up and down from ISS by 20. Well, it's now 20, almost late into 23. Tenacity is finally completed, built, and it's ready for ground testing in preparation for launch. And they're going to ship it to the Armstrong test facilities in Ohio for this kind of testing. This has to do with environmental vibration testing, things like that that has to go through during launch and once in orbit. Their plan is to have it ready to launch by the end of this year and launch in 24, and that's great news. It took a long time to get it off the ground, but once it launches, this vehicle gives Sierra Space a product of great value because it's a reusable shuttle and it can be adapted, and they intend to adapt it for manned flight as well. And for the many private commercial space stations that are coming, they have a product that those stations are going to want. And so this is a good thing for the company, and I hope things ramp up now much faster.
Bob, do you have any insight as to why the development has been so long and drawn out and troubled? Do we know?
I have suspicions. I'll speculate a little bit. The company Sierra Space used to be called, was once part of a company called Sierra Nevada, which has many other interests. And they broke off Sierra Space from Sierra Nevada. It is still owned by the same people. But by breaking it off into its own entity, it becomes much more focused. I think they were not as focused beforehand. And the company didn't have the resources of its own to spend the money it should when it was part of that full company. By separating it out, it becomes easy to obtain investment capital. It's more focused. It also becomes more focused on what it does. And I think that's part of the reason. Because once Sierra Space became separated out from Sierra Nevada, the action has been much faster. They're making things happen in a much more aggressive manner. And I think that was the reason.
We go now to also commercial space. This is Big Space, Space Force, giving contracts to SpaceX and ULA, sharing $2.5 billion for what? What's the mission?
The military has a deal whereby they limit the number of companies that can bid on launch contracts. This is swampland stupidity. I mean, why you should limit the bidding on any future launch contract makes no sense. But that's how the military, the Space Force, has done it now for decades, since the beginning of this century. And so they originally only limited it to one company, ULA. They were the only ones that could bid. SpaceX sued, and so the Space Force allowed SpaceX to bid as well. A few years ago, they announced that for future contracts, ULA and SpaceX would be the only two they'd allowed bidding. And so the Space Force periodically announces new launch contract deals for these two companies. And so they announced new contracts for 21 total launches between SpaceX and ULA for the military over the next 3 to 4 years. They gave 10 launches to SpaceX and 11 to ULA. There's a lot of craziness here from the Space Force because ULA doesn't have a rocket to launch these 11 launches. It's assumed that the Vulcan rocket will do all 11, But the Vulcan rocket is not operational yet. It hasn't even done its first launch. They hope to have that first launch before the end of this year. And if it's successful, they still have to do a second launch before the Space Force will actually certify it to do these military launches. So I would not be at all surprised if a lot of those launches that ULA has gotten a contract for get shifted over to SpaceX because ULA is not prepared to meet the contract. But nonetheless, Space Force wants to have two different companies for redundancy. It makes sense. They just got to get, ULA just got to get its act together.
It seems, Bob, every once in a while, you have this mysterious hand from Blue Origin elbowing its way in or hand-holding its way in to where it hasn't delivered, but it wants to be present in some fashion.
Yeah, Blue Origin has sued because they were not included in the agreement from the military to only bid contracts from SpaceX and ULA. They wanted to be included, but the Space Force actually made a wise decision in one sense. They didn't include Blue Origin because it wasn't going to produce anything, at least not when they needed it. That's one way to look at it. The other way is I would have said, open it up to everybody. You might have actually sped Blue Origin up, and they might have gotten things accomplished because they had the opportunity to win bids. But once they lost the ability to bid on military contracts, it kind of takes the balloon out of the air.
Doesn't ULA have a deal with Blue Origin about a rocket?
Well, yeah, the other part of it, one of the reasons ULA was delayed with its Vulcan rocket is because of Blue Origin, because ULA decided to use the Blue Origin's BE-4 engine for the first stage of the Vulcan rocket. And Blue Origin was 4 years behind schedule in providing those engines. And so for 4 years, Vulcan was almost ready to launch. They wanted to launch it in 20, and I think they could have if they had the engines on hand, but they didn't have engines, so they had to sit and wait. When they finally got engines last year, they began doing the testing to get ready to launch, discovered that one of the engines was no good, so they had more delays getting the new engine back. Then they had their own problems with an upper stage failure in testing, so they had to get that fixed, but now they're looking for a launch finally. The other issue here is that it's questionable whether Blue Origin can deliver all the engines necessary for all those Vulcan launches, because they still have not demonstrated they have the ability to manufacture these engines in a sufficient amount. They might be able to, but they haven't demonstrated it yet.
Something about this gives me pause, Bob. Senate gives NASA and Commerce responsibility for space junk over the other possibilities. Here's why. When you give any project to the U.S. government, it never goes away.
You know, John, this is like the issue here has to do with space junk. The FCC, beyond its statutory authority, decided arbitrarily that its job was to regulate space junk, and its job was to regulate satellite manufacturers on how they would build their satellites to deorbit them. And the FCC doesn't have that legal right, but they decided that was their responsibility. Well, so the people in the Senate especially don't like it when some of these people don't like it when government bureaucrats decide they write the law. And it's the Congress's job to write the law. So the Senate has now passed a bill giving the main job of not regulating space junk, but documenting its existence to the Department of Commerce, as well as directing NASA to develop projects to figure out how to remove it. This is much more sensible, and it's very much a slap in the face of the FCC. It's basically telling the FCC, you don't have the right to do any of this stuff. It's not going to hold. Instead, we want Commerce to develop a list of objects that must be removed. This is not regulating satellite construction. It's to figure out what has to be removed and have NASA come up with projects and concepts for removing the stuff. And that makes much more sense. So in a sense, you're right, John. You always should worry about the government getting involved. But in this case, it's a case of our elected officials trying to grab back some of their constitutional power from the bureaucratic swamp and the administrative state that now runs.
I just picture the federal government in the year 2123, the Bureau of Space Junk getting larger and larger and larger.
That's what the FCC wants to be. That's what the FCC was trying to do. It created its own department of space junk. It did.
It would never, never go out of business. Never.
That's right. Never. The problem here always is that we're giving jobs to the government no matter what, that the government should have no say
at all. Where if you hired private enterprise and gave them a contract, it'd get done and say, come back.
You know, let's go back to the deal. The senators asked NASA to develop projects for removing space junk. If NASA does it right, NASA will develop no projects at all. It will offer ask private enterprise to come up with concepts and buy the product from the private sector. If the NASA does that, then it'll be the private sector doing the work, and NASA just be instigated.
And the reason for this is our old friend, the bottom line. There is no bottom line in Washington, D.C., but there is SpaceX, because if they don't break even, they're broken. We're Bob Zimmerman. It is subscription time for Bob Zimmerman, just a few days. Your generosity, most appreciated. We're going exploring with the Probe Lucy. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.